Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. What a dull, gray, flavorless world we'd all live in if it weren't for the magic of spice. Israeli-born Lior Lev Sercars is one of the world's preeminent authorities on that subject. We sit down with Lior to hear his spellbinding take on the flavors and effects to be drawn from the spice cabinet. Then, the spice talk continues with the dancing chef, Natasha McAllen. She approaches spices from a health point of view and has some pretty surprising revelations regarding something that most of us regard as a little seasoning help. Then, we visit an apothecary shop where all the holistic medicines are crafted from spice. Gird your taste buds. We're getting pretty spicy on this week's Louisiana Eats.
My name is Lior Lev Sercars. I'm the owner and founder of La Boite, located in New York City. One point that I try to convey, a message that I try to send, is whether you're a home cook or a professional, you should be using spices in your food on a daily basis. It's not reserved for a certain season of the year. It doesn't have to be a lot. It could be just very few. But do take the time to empty your spice cabinet or drawer as often as possible and taste what's in there.
Chef and spice blender Lior Lev Sercars has been called a number of things: spice therapist, spice magician, and spice master. He's purveyor to some of the best chefs throughout the world, but his journey has been a somewhat unexpected one, given his background. When we sat down with Lior in our Louisiana Eats studios, I began by asking him about his globe-trotting journey to New York, which began in Galilee, Israel.
I was born into the worst culinary scene on the planet, which was the 70s and Israel and a kibbutz. But luckily, I was shown better food over my childhood and developed a great passion for food and spices. My parents, without even thinking too much, shaped kind of this love for food from the fact that we traveled a lot with them and they always exposed us to different kinds of food.
Yes, because even though you're from Israel and lived on a kibbutz, when you all lived and traveled in other places in Europe, there wasn't a pig or a shellfish issue. You all just went
with
that.
There were no kids' menu back then. So I ate what my parents ate. And if it was frog's legs at the age of 6 and different types, and I don't know if I should say that live, but horse meat, which is banned, I think, in Europe at this. But it was available when I was a child in Belgium and even later in France. So we tried everything. Some I liked, some I didn't like, but at least I got exposed to it. And I really saw the passion and the beauty and what food could do aside from just the fact that you need to eat to survive. There's way beyond that. And in those days in Israel, food was purely a mean of survival. There was no conversation about food, which I got to experience while living in Europe and how passionate people were about it.
Well, still in Israel, many of your very first, the ignitions in your brain about what you were going to later pursue happened. I love the story of how you created your first spice blend.
So the beauty of Israel is that it's composed out of about 60 to 70 ethnic groups with a lot of food influences. And as a child, I was already fascinated with food and nature and being able to just go outside and pick a lot of things. And I'd say the first spice blending experience, without even thinking too much about it, was working again in the kibbutz in the fish farm industry. And at the end of a long fishing day, where you take out a few thousand pounds of tilapia or carps or trouts, you need to eat something. And it's very easy because you have a lot of fish around you. So you just start a little fire and then have to season the fish. And there were a couple of jars of some garlic and chili and cumin and all sorts of things, and very simply creating that spice blend, rubbing it on a fish and grilling it. And only probably 30 years later, looking back at it, was maybe my first ever spice blend, which I wish I had the recipe for because I don't even remember what it was.
It sort of makes that whole idea of spice blending, it becomes BC when you're doing it on the banks of the Galilee.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Then there was a lot more inspiration that came your way in life. I'd love for you to tell me about the Levinsky Spice Market in Tel Aviv.
So there is a really nice market in Tel Aviv called the Levinsky Market. It's probably like two or three blocks of spice vendors, some wholesale, some retail. And I used to spend a lot of hours walking up and down these two or three blocks and sampling things, buying things. Often enough, you walk into that store and they'll offer you some rice that they've just cooked with one of the spices, or some dried fruits. And they were always pretty puzzled seeing a young guy like myself being interested, because that's not usually the clientele they used to see. And I used to just buy as much as I could and take it back home and start experimenting and playing with it, just because I was so fascinated with this world over there.
At what point was it in your life that you decided to pursue a career in food?
I cooked and learned how to cook from my mom. I should say without my mom, because she was working late. So I would make lunch or dinner quite often when she was running late. And that's my first hands-on experience in cooking. And then following that, I joined the military, like most young Israelis do, and had to supervise the kitchen staff as part of my duties as a sergeant. Learned a little bit about a different way of cooking. And after that, I just had to get a job, like, you know, most people do, and decided that I would try cooking. I found a young guy who had a catering company who loved the idea that I've never learned professionally how to cook. And he decided to teach me how to cook. And that's, I think, the beginning of this more than 20 years love affair with food and the culinary world.
Lior, the first chef who figures largely in your life is a Frenchman whose name is Chef Rollinger.
That is correct, yeah. As part of my culinary studies in Lyon at the Paul Bocuse Institute, you are required to do externships. And my second externships led me to Cancale, a small town in Brittany, working for Olivier Rollinger. And it was kind of a life-changing experience, personally and professionally, the very short 8 months that I spent in Cancale. I found myself surrounded with bags of exotic spices in a French restaurant in France, in Brittany. It didn't make a whole lot of sense at the beginning. And when I started speaking with Olivier about it, it started making more sense, knowing that Saint-Malo was a very important harbor that imported exotic spices and other things from the Far East 300-400 years beforehand. Also, the idea that you could cook local cuisine, but you have to season it somehow. And seasoning, meaning spices, for the most part, do not grow locally. Very few places actually grow them. So, and his ability to transport people and showing them other experiences was thanks to these spices. And that's, I would say, it was my first serious introduction into the world of spices.
So then, once you finished your training in Europe, you had the incredible good fortune of landing with the fabulous Chef Daniel Boulud in New York City.
again, a kind of an ironic thing. I lived in France for 5 years and needed a break from France, French people, and Lyon. And out of all things, ended up working for a Frenchman from Lyon in New York. I love Daniel dearly. We spent nearly 6 years working together, and I owe him a lot, teaching me about quality and generosity and hospitality. And I also mainly thank him, and he's well aware of that, for the fact that I am no longer in a kitchen every day, is him being able to open my eyes. So the idea that you can express your culinary knowledge even after 20 years as a chef in other domains, whether you're a spice blender, whether you're a writer, a journalist, and so on. There's a lot that can be done with this beautiful world of the culinary world.
So you make the decision to become an entrepreneur, and we can all go shopping with you at La Boite online, no matter where we are in the world. However, in Hell's Kitchen in New York City, would you take us on a typical shopping experience at your store?
Absolutely. So when somebody comes to our store, and the store is open to the public, we don't just serve the professional industry. It's important for myself or for the great staff that works at La Boite to understand who you are and help you understand that you are you, whether you like it or not. And if your big thing is just microwaving frozen food, which is totally fine by me, or if you're, on the contrary, butchering your own animals, that's great. There are different ways that you should or can season your food, and what your likes and dislikes. I often like ask people what they hate before I ask them what they like. And I find that very liberating for a lot of people. And then after that, we could start suggesting a few spice blends that we think would work. My goal is to have you leave us and run as fast as you can to a kitchen nearby and start cooking or start eating and experimenting with the spices, knowing that we make blends that are not meant for just one thing. We invite you to try each and every of the 80 or so blends on anything from coffee, tea, savory, sweet beverages. Just try them. Some might not work that great, but for the most part, they will work, and you will never look back.
When we return from a short break, our conversation with spice expert Lior Lev-Sercars continues. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from Cafe B, featuring contemporary Creole cuisine with an emphasis on fresh Gulf seafood, served in a classic old Metairie setting. Lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, and private events on Metairie Road. Conversation with visionary spice savant Lior Lev-Sercars continues. Lior, I think there might still be some confusion in people's mind about the difference between herbs and spices. Would you demystify that?
Sure. To me, there is no difference. My definition of spices is completely different than the dictionaries. To me, spices equal seasoning. So everything you choose to season your food or beverage with, to me, is a spice. Whether it's sugar, whether it's berries, cheese, as long as it's in a dry form, to me, it's a spice. So there's really no distinction between herbs and spices or grains and rhizomes and barks and berries. And we use cheese powder, we use seafood powder. their spices to me. I would say this, you have to taste and educate yourself the same way that you would not buy a bad piece of meat or fish or vegetable. Why would you buy something that you have no idea what it tastes like? And maybe you don't like salt, or maybe you don't like pepper. And that's fine by me. Don't have them in your kitchen. The fact that recipes call for seasoning with salt and pepper doesn't mean you have to use salt and pepper. You could use hot sauce, or you could use caper or fish sauce to replace your salt if that's. But embrace yourself and have what you need at home, not what you are told.
So you're in the grocery store and you're buying spices. So you want to make sure, for one thing, in a jar of something that's in a relatively whole condition, there's not any little powder down at the bottom. Are there any other signs? Is there any labeling that exists that people should be aware of?
Sadly, the labeling requirements are very loose in terms of best before, where it's from, how it's sanitized, but it's going to change. I'm fairly confident. What you can do at your local store is do a few quick things. Is if a bag says whole black peppercorn, yet there's also bits of yellow and beige and brown in it, then it really doesn't deliver on the word black. If there's a lot of powder in the bottom, it doesn't deliver on the way whole because it's powdered. So stay away from that package or that brand. Price is not always a sign of quality. However, in the spice world, spices that cost a little more could be better because they were sourced more responsibly. They were packed better. So you might want to stick with those, knowing that you get great quality. You're going to use less of that spice versus the 99-cent spice where you're going to have to dump half a jar to make a statement or a point.
You mentioned your work with the professional trade. How do you get into the mind and the palate of a chef?
In order for me to create a blend for a chef or a professional or a bartender for that matter, we have to start dating in a way. I would like to know who they are, you know, what they like to cook, what they like to eat, so that I understand. Even if we are talking about a particular dish, my goal is to make a blend that is timeless. To make a blend, I need an idea, a concept, a story. I do this exercise. I said, this blend is going to be great because, and I try to complete that sentence. And if it works, then I could get going. So it could be a person, it could be a place, an experience, a dish that I ate. And I really write down the keywords that describe that experience. Thanks to the 10 or more years of professional blending experience that I have, I can put next to these words spices that will represent coarse or yellow or hot or sour. And then I have a little ingredient list all of a sudden. And then I start limiting the amount of things. And I pretty much end up with a recipe right then and there that allows me to go to my spice shelves and start grabbing these 6-10 ingredients and measuring them very precisely on a scale. Also deciding what I will grind, what I will not grind, and to what degree. Will I toast some of them or will I not? Not everything needs to be or should be. The rest is pretty mechanical. It's toasting, grinding, combining. I never, ever judge a spice blend right then and there for a couple of reasons. A, the temperature is still pretty warm. The second is that the people that will purchase that spice blend will never see it the same way. So it might be a month before they actually see it. I would like to be in their shoes a month later and to know what they're going to experience. So I do sometimes go back every couple of days until I figure out what I need to adjust, if I need to adjust. Luckily, over time, I became a bit better at what I do. So there's less room for errors. But every so often, I will start again just because I had one idea and it didn't deliver. Or the funny thing is that I would work on one idea and go to a complete different one and end up with another and end up making two blends, wanting to make just one.
Now, you undoubtedly put your hands on, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds of spices in your lifetime. Is there a holy grail of spice discovery that you're waiting to happen in your life?
I don't know. I am, my goal that I hope that I will never reach is to create a spice blend that will capture the scent of rain or after the rain, which is to me the most fascinating scent ever. I like tobacco and I like rubber and I like spices. I'm intrigued by scents to begin with and flowers. The holy grail to me is the scent after the rain and in different parts of the world because it smells differently. And I really hope I'm never going to get there because then what?
Oh, I am just so thrilled to have had this chance to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much for making the time to visit with us. And don't you come back here without calling us again.
Thank you for having me.
World-renowned spice expert, Lior Lev Sirkaz.
Hi, my name is Natasha MacAller, and I'm the author of Spice Health Heroes.
After embarking on a dream as a professional ballerina at the age of 13, Natasha MacAller realized there was a shelf life for dancers and started taking culinary classes during her seasonal layoffs. Upon graduating from the Colorado Culinary Institute in 1996, she leapt into a second career as a professional chef. We recently spoke with the dancing chef to discuss her new book, Spice Health Heroes, Unlock the Power of Spice for Health, Flavor, and Well-Being. Natasha, congratulations on your book and welcome to Louisiana Eats. Tell me about how a dancer becomes a chef. It's very interesting to me.
Well, I was quite fortunate to know what I wanted to do when I was 6 years old, which was to be a ballerina. And thankfully, I was supported by my parents, and off I went to ballet class. And part of being a dancer is being conscious of what you're eating. And so there was always a fascination with food, sometimes quite an obsession with food. And I became fascinated with the process of food and flavors and tasting and making beautiful things. And as I said in Vanilla Table, my other book, the only art form that I'm aware of that has a sell-by date is the art of dance. You know, an artist, a singer, they can improve, they can grow as they get older, and a dancer has to retire. So I chose to get into cooking.
One day you end up on the shelf and you decided you'd rather be on the pantry shelf?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I didn't have to turn my feet out so much, but still long hours of standing on one's feet and being physically active and being creative. And it's pastry and food, it's an art form as well. It's presented to an audience who enjoy it, who experience it, and all that's left is the memory as a performance in the theater.
Tell me, why are spices health heroes?
Very good question. Spices are my health heroes. I've selected 30 spices that have not only beautiful flavors, they're also packed full of nutrients, and they're packed full of health-enabling compounds. And it's been a fascinating journey. I've teamed up with a number of chefs from around the world and also a number of medical doctors from around the world working together to promote and to make the reader aware of something called culinary medicine.
Natasha, I loved the way you broke down the spices into various categories, and I'd like to go through some of your categories. So let's talk about the immune spices. And I'd really like to know the truth about turmeric, the spice you refer to as the master spice.
Turmeric. Oh, my goodness. Where do I begin? Turmeric or turmeric, they're both acceptable to say. Turmeric is the spice of the moment. People are talking about adding it to their smoothies and their food. And It's a major component of Indian cuisine, what we call Indian cuisine, your curry blend. And as I've been studying this, it is the most studied and researched spice in the world, and primarily in India. It's been used in Ayurvedic alternative medicine, you know, the ancient Indian medicine, for thousands and thousands of years. And there are studies going on to reduce inflammation, joint inflammation, arthritis. It's also been studied for Alzheimer's, for staving off Alzheimer's. Its available component is called curcumin, not to be confused with cumin. It supports the liver. It's got analgesic benefits. Did you know that one of the compounds in turmeric is used in Tylenol?
I learned that in your book, Natasha. Thank you. And I was amazed. I was just amazed to learn that. Rosemary was really fascinating to me, because all the stuff about the carcinogens that come from blackened, darkened, grilled meats and such on the charcoal. And yet you say that if you cook with rosemary when you're doing this, you combat some of that effect.
Yes, it was one of the most fascinating and thrilling compounds that I discovered through one of my contributing doctors, who explains about the active compound. It helps block the carcinogenic properties of burning meat. And you can use it as a marinade. You can just sprinkle a little bit of dried rosemary or fresh rosemary needles into a marinade, or just sprinkle it on your meat as it's cooking, or as I used in my marinated lamb dish. I used both. I used it in the marinade, and also cooked the lamb on rosemary skewers on the barbecue. There was a fascinating study I read for college students who are cramming for classes to make a rosemary tea, and I've got a recipe in the beginning all about rosemary, to make a rosemary tea and add a little bit of cocoa, and that the rosemary is to help with clarity and the cocoa with energy, and it tastes good too.
Why is bay leaf the noble spice?
It is called the noble spice, or I call it the noble spice, because it was used in Olympian ceremonies in Greece, and the laurel crown that athletes still receive in Olympics is made of laurel leaves. So it's the regal spice. It's been around for thousands of years and used. I love using bay leaf. I just think it's fabulous.
Natasha, why is garlic the Russian penicillin spice?
Because of its very powerful antibiotic properties. This was recorded during World War II. It was used to help the soldiers who were, of course, going through this terrible winter, and they ran out of traditional antibiotics such as penicillin, and so they resorted to garlic, which is ancient penicillin.
Well, when we move on to the energy spices, you refer to black pepper as the king.
Oh, most certainly black pepper is the king. Peppercorn, black peppercorn, and green and white, those are all the same variety, contain this active compound, fascinating compound called piperine. And the piperine is a bioenabler, and that means a substance that, when paired with nutrients or even medicine, can maximize the absorption and longevity of the active compounds in the bloodstream. So what it's saying is that if you have something that's super nutritious, add some peppercorn to it. Always use peppercorn. I can't quite do it in my coffee yet, but I use it in many of my dishes. It helps allow the nutrients, and they're even doing studies on medicines to remain in the body longer, thereby giving you more benefit without having to have more of those nutrients. And with the turmeric, of course, it stays in longer, so it helps with the arthritic and pain complaints. So I love it.
Well, congratulations. And I have to tell you, it's informative and it's so beautiful. It's just about lickable. So,
all right, I've done my job. Manya's photos are just tremendous.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful work from cover to cover. thank you so much for writing Spice Health Heroes. And we look forward to talking with you soon in person on Louisiana Eats.
Oh, my pleasure, Poppy. Thank you so much.
Natasha McAller, the Dancing Chef. Take a walk around Bayou St. John in New Orleans, and most of what you'll see is expected. Residents walking their dogs along the water, the Cabrini Bridge, and Parkway Tavern. Walk just a block further, and you'll find something unexpected. A functional apothecary. 2 years ago, Christiane Wormstead, a Western herbalist, opened Rosalie Apothecary to share her love and knowledge of herbal medicine. Today, Rosalie offers a plethora of herbal remedies, along with several workshops open to the public. Producer Sarah Holtz visited the Serene Herb Shop, where Christiane shared some wisdom about culinary herbs and local foraging.
Do you want the rest of the Earl Grey?
Yeah, I need an ounce of it, so that's...
Hi, my name is Christiane Wormstead, and I am the owner of Rosalie Apothecary. Rosalie Apothecary is located in Mid-City, New Orleans, right by the tip of Bayou St. John on the Lafitte Greenway. And it started out of my house a couple years ago. I just would make tea blends to sell them at the Covington Farmers Market. But it was always a dream of mine to have an herb shop, a full-service herb shop. So when we spotted this building in Mid-City a couple years ago, we jumped on it. One of the classes that we teach is kitchen medicine, actually. It's the first one because we really do believe that health and dis-ease start with digestion in the gut, and that's where the secrets and sources of our health lie. A lot of the herbs that we cook with are herbs that are good for digestion. And that's not a mistake, I don't think, with the culinary history and the history of food. Depending on the digestive complaints, you know, fennel is really good for flatulence and bloating. Also, rosemary and sage are really, the aromatic herbs are really good for getting the digestive juices flowing, and also sage particularly is good for helping your body metabolize fats. And a lot of these herbs, like sage and rosemary, they inhibit the growth of bacteria, and that's why they're used in food. They help create healthful gut microbes and environment that for like the balanced of the bacteria in the digestive system. And then we have bitters, which are really important for digestion, and sometimes people traditionally ate, like, you know, arugula or bitter greens before their meal, because the taste of bitter signals to the body and stimulates the flow of saliva, which is the first step in breaking down the food, and then it sends messages to release the bile for the digestion to be most efficient. So some of the people traditionally take burdock and dandelion and gentian, or even fenugreek is kind of bitter, herbs like that.
What are some of your favorite ways to cook with those culinary herbs? Like, what are some of your go-tos?
Well, I personally love to cook with rosemary and sage, particularly with meat and or chicken. And then I love to cook curries, which is such a blend of a bunch of different spices like cinnamon and fenugreek and cardamom and all those herbs. If you make chicken broth, you can add some herbs in there, or even burdock and dandelion are good to add in some stocks. And then chickweed is the last herb I love, which grows locally here. You can pick it in the city. It comes up around February or early March.
Are there a lot of herbs that you can find just foraging around the New Orleans area?
There's a handful of them. Cleavers, that's really good for the lymphatic system. These are the spring herbs. Violets are popping up. In the spring or early summer, the mimosa blossoms will blossom from the trees. Those are really good actually for heartbreak and heartache and kind of heart health. Gotu Kola grows a lot. If you generally just part any patch of grass, then that's really good for like brain function and like restoring elasticity in the skin, but also the tendons and the ligaments. There's like in people's gardens, like across the street in the bathtub over there, there's horsetail, also known as shave grass, which is good for high in minerals and good for the urinary tract and the kidneys. And
that's a lot.
I know. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, I'm not even naming all of them, but those are the ones that I can think of off the top of my head. People actually don't really have a lot of misconceptions about herbs. I think that it's a very innate relationship, an innate calling. I mean, if people are coming to Rosalie Apothecary, they are curious and they want to learn. It's something that people are really drawn to, and I think it's just like part of being a human. I think that plants and humans have co-evolved together for hundreds of thousands of millions of years, and like, you know, if you think of like the span of our species, like modern medicine is just like a blip, like, you know, where this is like very ancient. I'm not comparing the two really, they're very different. But I think that people want to learn more and they feel like it's natural for their bodies. And we understand that not everyone knows about herbs, but that doesn't mean that they're not curious, and so that we're happy to be herbal resource for anyone who walks in the door.
Cool. Thank you so much. Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Christiane Wormstead, owner of Rosalie Apothecary. Is salt a spice or a seasoning? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blend beans are locally roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. Is salt a spice or a seasoning? Actually, it's neither. Salt is a mineral. Just check the periodic table. And it's very, very different from everything else in your spice cabinet and pantry. For one thing, it doesn't lose its flavor with age. It's a remarkable standalone ingredient that has had a tremendous impact on human history. There are two kinds of culinary salts, sea salt and mined salt, but all salt begins with seawater. Sea salt is evaporated from salty waters, while mined salt comes from ancient deposits left by seas dried up long, long ago. So bless the cook and pass the salt. Or just bless the salt. Life without it would be very, very bland indeed. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. And now it's time to talk about a different kind of herb. With the rapid rise of medicinal and recreational marijuana use throughout the country, culinarians and entrepreneurs alike are seizing the moment to take an ancient herb and create something entirely new. Gerwin Angel invented a machine he calls magical butter, which infuses any sort of herb, including cannabis, to make healing oils and flavorful butters. Feeling as though this machine was almost too magical to be true, we called Gerwin to find out more about magical butter and its many herbal concoctions.
Cannabis is an incredibly medicinal herb. The molecules of the cannabis plant, we have receptors all throughout our body that are designed to interact. Actually, every cell has receptors within it. And those receptors take the signaling of the molecules that we provide, and then it sends off endogenous compounds for us to create, like anandamide. And anandamide helps reduce inflammation, and inflammation is the key ingredient of almost every disease. So as you just start to trace through the steps, you realize that cannabis is a great plant. Chamomile is a great plant. Cilantro, there's so many just natural herbs. Every pharmaceutical that we get today is a root in herb or a plant or something that we've synthesized because we discovered it in a root in herb or a plant. Mm-hmm. And then it's standardized in a pill form and we take that as medicine. Well, why not just eat the root, the herb, or the plant? Why do we have to synthesize it, put it in a pill form, and then introduce it into our diet as medicine? Why don't we introduce it as food?
Well, that makes perfect sense. And so was your initial motivation with this the cannabis industry?
My initial motivation was this was I had a very good friend of mine who was suffering from Crohn's disease, and he was smoking cannabis to control his outbreaks with a high degree of success. So that showed me the correlation because the only thing that changed in his life was he was no longer able to inhale because of his asthma. That then got me onto edible cannabinoids and how they function in the body. And here we are, fast forward 7 years later, and we've had success around the world doing this.
So your machine, you can make an extractive oil in an hour. It'll do a butter in 2 hours, a tincture in 4 hours, and concentrated oil in 5 hours. Explain.
And then it cleans itself.
And then it cleans itself.
And then it cleans itself. So we took all the naysayers' reasons out. So it even cleans itself.
What is the proportion that goes into the machine? Let's say that you're going to make some magic butter. So how much butter goes into the machine along with how much herb?
So we recommend 7 to 14 grams per stick of butter. It's got a 4-stick butter minimum, so if you're going to make a butter, you'd use about an ounce to 2 ounces. You can also do this with oils. You can do it with alcohols. And so an alcohol that is infused with botanicals is called a tincture. And then when we reduce the alcohol down, now it's called a concentrate. Oh, that's kind of your guidelines, is anywhere between, an ounce to 5 ounces, depending on application and the solvent that you're using. So what are we really trying to do with this? And that's just like any recipe. essentially this is your base ingredient to your recipe. So if you make a butter, then you can make, breads and brownies, anything like that. You can make coconut oils or any kind of oils, and you can use those as cooking oils. You can also make that into a salad dressing. So my favorite thing to infuse is salad dressing. I love eating infused salads because it's everything that we should be doing. Like, you can't go get a nice salad and drink a beer with it. You can go get a nice salad that's infused with, either THC or CBD or a combination of both and get a therapeutic effect. And when you're drinking, you're typically looking for a therapeutic effect.
So is this a home version, or is someone who is possibly looking into getting into a business in some state where this is legal, is it possible that this could have commercial application as well?
It does both. It's used in commercial applications around the world, and it's used in home kitchens around the world. There's been multiple dispensaries that have won cannabis cups utilizing our technology. So it's very simple to use, and the user interface is tremendous. So all you do is press two buttons, and then it has a love glove to keep your hand clean and your medicine or your ingredients sanitary. And then there's a filter bag to separate the plant medium back from whatever the base ingredient was that you made. So it's a very simple process. You get everything in one box, and we have a full vertical coming out. So you'll have molds and multiple other devices now that are all complementary. Everybody can be their own dispensary or scientific kitchen, because everyone's different, and we need individualized solutions based on your response of what made you feel good.
Thank you for the fascinating information, and I hope to talk to you again about your next big developments on Louisiana Eats.
Yeah, and thank you for the outlet to your listeners. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to a long relationship of giving Louisiana, one of my favorite states in the nation, great content that's compelling surrounding plant-based medicines, extracts, and most importantly, cannabis.
Founder of Magical Butter, Gerwin Angel. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Tune in next week when we talk culinary mentorship with chefs John Besh and Aaron Sanchez.
You don't want a young person to only know one mentor. You want them to have multiple narratives, and through that process, that young person is going to form their own culinary identity and style.
On Thursday, March 23rd, Louisiana Eats is teaming up with French Market Coffee for our next celebrity chef dinner that benefits our home at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Join us for an evening of fun and fine dining as Chef Chris Montero of the Napoleon House prepares a three-course meal right before your very eyes with wines paired by Bin 428. To see the full menu and buy tickets, visit my website, poppytooker.com. Have you missed an episode of Louisiana Eats? Hear today's show or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and take us with you wherever you go. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau and from Dickie Brennan Steakhouse, a local New Orleans steakhouse serving prime beef in New Orleans French Quarter. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.